Hi, this is Mike Gianfacaro with the Princeton Tigers, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, and featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, an inside lacrosse analyst, and my homeboy from Homewood, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. March is definitely rolling in like a lion this year with eight matchups with top 20 teams squaring off. We'll preview those epic eight battles. We'll talk to Princeton goalkeeper Michael Gianfracaro, who will be playing in two of those games. We'll also review two OT thrillers in the midweek, look at the big picture coming out of last weekend, and always have our give and go. Lots to get to. So, Dixie, let's get it. Hey, Dixie, I got to start by saying Pat Spencer, Twarton winner 2019 from Loyola, played in his first NBA game, official NBA game this year. That is an incredible accomplishment for a guy who didn't play basketball for 4 years, played 1 year. I mean, just what an athlete. What an athlete. And then you put that along with Jared Bernhardt, who won the Twart in 2021, who played for the Atlanta Falcons in the 2022 season. It's just, I mean, that's just so hard to do. Just so, those guys are just special. What do you take on that?
We've been talking for years and years about the evolution of the lacrosse athlete, bigger, faster, stronger. And I think nothing is more illustrative of that than Pat Spencer and Jared Bernhardt playing the game at the highest level in both the sports of basketball and football. I think it also speaks to their talent in those sports and their work ethic and dedication after playing collegiate lacrosse for 4 years and having the success that they had, winning Tourton trophies, All-American status, going down as, you know, in Pat Spencer's case, the greatest player in the history of Loyola Greyhound lacrosse, which has had some pretty darn good players in their history. And you could argue that Jared Bernhardt could be the greatest Terrapin of all time. There's an argument to be made, right? I mean, he won the player of the year, and he won the Tourton, and he won a national championship. And so he's up there with the greatest Terrapins of all time. But to be able then, after those lofty accomplishments, to go back to the sports that they didn't pursue at the collegiate level and ascend into the professional ranks, that's remarkable. Really is.
Yeah, after that, you know, four-year hiatus, go back and play 1 year for Pat, college basketball at Northwestern, for Jared, football at Ferris State, and then just pursue their dreams in another sport. It's just, it's crazy. And super, my compliments to those guys. I just can't say enough about what an incredible feat that is and how impressed I am by it. Speaking of impressive, lots of great games last weekend. Georgetown upsets Notre Dame on Sunday, but almost overshadowing some of the great games that were on Saturday, like Denver getting a win over Cornell, Hopkins gets a win over Carolina, Maryland beats Princeton, and Virginia gets a win over Ohio State. When you think about last weekend, Dix, what were some of your big takeaways?
Let's start with Georgetown Notre Dame. Huge win for the Hoyas. A couple things stick out immediately. One, the development and the performance of the Georgetown defense. In a month's time, they go from giving up 18 goals to Loyola in their season opener to really, you know, strangling the Notre Dame offense and keeping the Cavanaughs at bay. Secondly, Georgetown. I love the fact that they got the first two goals of Chase Llewellyn's career as a senior, guy who just hasn't played much. Cade Goldberg, a junior midfielder, had his first career point, I believe, an assist in the game. If things aren't working, it's okay to give other guys a shot. And I think we saw Georgetown do that on Sunday, which I was really impressed with. Lastly, instant replay. And this was harped on throughout the broadcast. And then I'm also seeing it on social media. You know, there's a couple social media outlets that say every high hit that's called, or a lot, the majority of high hits that are called, it's should this been a flag? Or we're just starting out with instant replay. I think it's been really, really good for the game, and I think it will continue to be. Like most things that are introduced to officials, it'll smooth out with more experience. I think, and I don't disagree with it, some folks are contending that they feel like the refs are using instant replay to make the call versus determining the severity of the hit and adjudicating the proper penalty time. It's there to use, and officiating is really, really competitive. You talk about lacrosse being competitive, kids vying for playing time and coaches wanting to win games. It's also that way for officials. And let's say that in a game like that, national television between two really, really good teams, one of which is the defending national champions, and they were the number one team in the country. Let's say they don't review the play, and they administered a 1 minute non-releasable indirect contact, you know, to the head. And then after the game, a coach is upset because it should have been 2 minutes after you review the film, and that official could get dinged and not get a good rating from that coach. And the question will be, why didn't you guys use review? Because the resource is there. So everyone's trying to figure it out. And lacrosse strikes me as a sport. You don't see it in football. You don't see it in basketball, where people just harp on the rules, especially during a broadcast. Kirk Herbstreit, Jay Billis, you know, they might reference that they don't like a rule and they move on very quickly and get back to the game. I feel like in lacrosse, we get way too critical of and we spend way too much time bemoaning rules versus just, okay, here's what it is. They're working it out. I don't like the rule. Let's get back to the game. Let's get back to the focus on the field. I think replay is a good thing. I talk to a lot of people that watch that game on TV. I talk to people that were in the stands. None of them really felt like it took away their pleasure of the game. It just kind of extended something that was pretty exciting. And I don't think it messed up the flow of the game either. But then, you know, maybe two people disagree, maybe you disagree. But anyway, they were my big takeaways from Notre Dame Georgetown. Maryland over Princeton. Maryland's defense continues to be really, really good. Luke Wehrman, Superman at the faceoff dot, was absolutely dominant. Denver, a shootout over Cornell. Really, really great win for the Denver Pioneers. And they're in the top five, right, for the Inside Lacrosse media poll. I think I got them up as high as number four, maybe, if not number five. Hopkins, Carolina, big win for the Blue Jays going into Chapel Hill. Veterans, offensive players really stood out. Brendan Grimes had a really good game for the Blue Jays. In a game where Jacob Angeles was really kind of held in check for really the first time all season. You had other parts of that Blue Jay offense stepping up. So just a really super entertaining weekend of college lacrosse, and hard to believe that we're only in, you know, coming into the first weekend in March. You know, there's just been so much action so far in 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. Great games. And this weekend, it's staggering the number of amazing games that are going to happen this weekend. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, there were two overtime thrillers in the midweek. On Tuesday night, Loyola beat Towson 11-10 in overtime. And then on Wednesday night, Army beat Syracuse in the Dome. And both of those games were just great, great watches for fans.
That was a much needed boost for the Loyola Greyhounds, a really disappointing result over the weekend, losing at home 13-5 to Rutgers. I'm in Dallas this week for meetings, and we're recording this as I'm sitting in my hotel room. Let me tell you about weather. Monday we get here, it's 91 degrees. Yesterday, Wednesday, it was 55. So I'm like, am I back in Baltimore? I mean, this is crazy. But as such, I was at an awards dinner on Tuesday night when Loyola played Towson. So I was able to watch the first half before I had to go down and join my team for the dinner. But when that game got late, I had my phone on the table, and my entire team was watching the game. And when Remy Reynolds hit that game winner as time expired, I mean, the whole team went nuts. Like, it was great. And they were like, "Oh my God, congratulations to Matt and his teammates, and let's make a video congratulating him." And
Oh,
I'm like,
geez.
"No, we're not." I'm like, "We're not doing that. Like, Matt's not into that. We're not doing that." "Well, are you at least going to text him?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure. Come on. What's the matter with you?" So big win for Loyola. A team that they really got to clear up their clearing game. Some more failed clears. We talked about that last week. I think they had seven against Johns Hopkins. And then Army Syracuse. Wow, what a game. I haven't been able to watch it yet. I was at another function last night. But my esteemed Blue Jay classmates, Carmen Cavallo and Brian Piccola, also in the chat group, Eric Chick and Todd Cavallaro, it was humming all night. All night it was humming. And I think Carmen summed it up best. Army guy decked a Syracuse guy after he scored a goal. And he said, "That is what you expect out of Army physical play. What you don't expect is the toe drag." So I think Army scored a goal off of a toe, like one of the lefties, little toe drag. And he goes, "That's skill." And he's like, "I've never seen an Army team with this much skill." So I think that kind of sums it all up. But you watch chunks of the game, right?
Yeah, I saw I had to watch it late on Wednesday night. So I watched and I knew what happened. So I watched the beginning, I watched the first quarter, and it was very even throughout the whole game. It was really fun, back and forth game, lots of scoring. It was 5-4, I think, at the end of the first quarter. So lots of scoring early. And then late in the game, Army had a lead with a little bit of time left, and Syracuse gets the ball, and Owen Hills just was going to go to the goal, and he ends up taking a shot. He got his hands free, like, probably about 12 yards out in front of the goal, and just ripped a shot that tied the game up. Overtime, Syracuse wins the faceoff and can't get anything going. They call timeout. They set up a play, and it looked like they got a couple of shots that they wanted to. And it ends with Joey Spallina ends up taking a behind the back shot. He probably could have shot it without having to go behind his back first, but it's saved. But here's where where it got crazy. Army has trouble clearing the ball. Christian Moulet has the ball on an open net from midfield, just inside the midfield line, and he missed an open net shot, like wide left. Army gets the ball back. They go down, and they ended up scoring the game winner. Eichner scores the game winner with about a minute and a half left. Place goes wild. Really a fun game to watch. Great play by both teams. And, I've been really critical about February lacrosse over the years, but man, it has delivered. This February, the 2024 season, which I knew was going to be a special season, if every month could be as good as February was, we're in for the greatest lacrosse season of all time, Dix.
What a month. What a great month of lacrosse February has provided us. And it's, if this is any indication of how the season is going to go, we're in for a real treat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, let me make
Speak.
one more comment on instant replay,
Yeah, go
and you
ahead.
can weave this in if it works and if not. And people like to make the argument that we should only use instant replay in the postseason. I think that is not the way to go for two reasons. One, let's say a team is late in the season in conference play and they need a win to make a four-team tournament for their conference. What if there's a play that was called incorrectly on the field and, maybe that missed call cost them an opportunity to get into conference tournament play and then subsequently NCAA tournament play. The other reason, you don't want to be in a big moment in the NCAA tournament, and the first time you're using replay is in that moment. You want to have experience utilizing it, experiencing it, both players, coaches. And I just really feel like conferences that aren't allowing it to be utilized, I think that it could come back to bite some of their teams. But we'll see how this plays out. But those are some of the reasons why I feel like it's necessary in the regular season.
Yeah, good points. Awesome slate of games ahead this weekend, Dixie, including two games featuring the Princeton Tigers. And our guest this week is Princeton goalie senior Michael Gianfracaro. Let's bring in Mike and talk to him. Our guest today is Princeton's Mike Gianfracaro, senior goalie for the Tigers, All-American last year. Mike, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's a blast. I love listening to it.
So, Mike, I noticed you got a fresh haircut. Tell me about this new look that you have and what you're doing here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the short answer is it's a cancer fundraiser. They did one in 2020, 2022, and now 2024 is the third year. Essentially, it's $1,000 per person that shaves their head. And they reserved enough money for the first 1,000 people. So $1 million if we get 1,000 people to shave their heads. It's with the Hope Street Foundation and Headstrong. And I believe the money is going to Dana-Farber, which is in Massachusetts. One of the players on our team, sophomore, was diagnosed with cancer when he was in high school. And thankfully, he was able to beat it. He's a great player for our team, Chad Palumbo. And it's something really near and dear to his heart. 'Cause from what I understand, it sounds like the lab where the money's going to was really influential in helping with his treatment and diagnosis and everything. So this is his short speech to us was this foundation saved his life. So it's important to him, it's important to us. So we had all 52 guys shave their head and we're rocking some new looks, but for a great cause.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And great to support your teammate. All right, let's back up a little bit and start with most lacrosse fans who are familiar with you probably know you as the All-American high school goalie from Culver, but you had a really unique high school experience. You grew up in like southeastern Pennsylvania, not a hotbed. You went to a small school where you were able to, they asked you to start at goalie as an eighth grader. And then you moved to National Power Culver, right? But I remember watching you one game, you guys got stomped. And I think you scored the only two goals for your team as the goalie. I think you got beat 18 to 2. You made like 22 saves or something, and you scored the only two goals for your team. To say that your Tower Hill team was thin on talent is generous. They have produced a few handful of college players, like Division I players.
Absolutely.
But
Yep.
when you were there, it was thin. And then you go to playing with almost nothing but Division I caliber guys at Culver, winning the national championship in 2019. How did that experience from that like humble high school start to being cast into the competitive fire at Culver shape your game and your lacrosse career?
Great question. So I want to start off by actually correcting you. I only scored one goal that game, and I was the only goal, but it was only one. It was the only time I've ever scored a goal in a spring high school lacrosse game. So I would say, yes, Tower Hill, it was the school I went to. We didn't really have a lot of stars. We definitely produced some good talent. Guys that played at Furman, like Dougie McCoy, Andrew Pettit went to Lehigh, was a Toronto watch list, played in the MLL. But it didn't, we were just a pretty good sized fish in a small pond in Delaware. And then moving to Culver, everyone that I played with, every starter I played with went and played Division I lacrosse. We had before the guys that were able to commit before the rule, so like the September 1st rule, which affected my grade, at one point we had like 20 guys going to play Division I. And then after the rule happened, it was 11 guys who played D1 every year, like 11 guys per grade. So we were really, really great. And I remember going there in the beginning of the fall, and we would practice on Sundays because we had a lot of guys play fall sports. And I would not make saves. I would just get rung up every single day in practice. And I was like, man, maybe I don't have what it takes. Maybe these guys are like way better than me, and I can't handle it. But eventually, I got my legs under me, and I was able to kind of get better as the weeks went on. Spring came, and it gave me a lot of confidence in my own ability. And I remember very vividly the first shot I ever got from another player when I was playing at Culver. We I'd been through our offseason, been through our preseason, and then we scrimmaged one of the Indiana teams. And this team had, I think, had won the state championship the year before. They're like a good Indiana team. And the kid shot one offside low on me. And I went past the ball. I actually almost missed the ball because I went too far past it. And I had to bring my hands back and make the save. And I was like, wow, that is so different than what I get every day in practice. And that was kind of an eye-opening experience. Like, if I'm able to make all these saves against guys like our seniors that year were Alex Simmons, Will Clayton, Austin Madronic, and then like Owen Hilt, the big player for us, Mike Robinson. Like, if I'm able to face those shots every day in practice and make some saves, then I'll be all right when the game time comes. So it taught me. I mean, when we were in Delaware, like you mentioned, I started as an eighth grader. So I kind of had success the whole time in Delaware. And then it was definitely humbling and kind of an ego check to go to Culver and have to build myself back up and with the coaches and the players and like kind of make myself better because I wasn't really, that good of a lacrosse player when I got there. And then great segue into college when everyone that we played in high school, we were playing against the best, and but only the top tier of those guys can go on to be the starters in college. And so the players in college and the ones you see, those are all like the best of the best. So another step up, and I didn't start right away. It took me a whole year of sitting the bench, and then probably the first third of the year, the first five games last year, I split. So another ego check, more humbling experiences, and Culver kind of gave me a little bit of taste of that, so I could realize what it meant to fight, to earn a job, to be able to be the guy in net. So then segue that. It was definitely humbling, and it helped me out become a better player for sure.
Yeah, so let's talk about your that transition from Culver to Princeton. So you were in the graduating class of 2020 and you lost your season, right? Because of the pandemic. And then you come to Princeton in the Ivy League, one of those conferences that they sat out the 2021 season. So you not only did you miss you would have had a great Culver team and your season was cut short. You don't get to play in the, at the time it was called the Under Armour All-America game that you were selected for. You don't get that. You don't get to play as a freshman in 2021. Lost that season of competition. And then you had to wait your turn at Princeton. I can only imagine how hard that was for a guy who has been starting since he was in eighth grade. You go to Culver and you're the starting goalie as in 10th grade. And then you play two seasons there and your senior year is cut short. What did you learn about yourself? About your patience and your competitiveness, your ability to like stick to it and just hang in there during that time when you couldn't play, and then when you had to sit and wait your turn at Princeton.
Well, I would look at it into two different sections. So the one where got canceled, which is my senior year high school and my freshman year of college, all of that training and stuff, I was working to compete for a job when we would be able to play. And so while the light at the end of the tunnel was really far away, I thought that eventually I'd be able to win it. And then my sophomore year, when we were finally able to play, Eric Peters was exceptional. And I was just trying to be the best backup, the best teammate that I could be. And then it was, at first it was trying to play, and then it was, support him the best way you can, just be a part of a great team. We went to the Final Four that year. I didn't play any meaningful minutes, but I mean, that was one of my favorite seasons I've ever been a part of because we had a great run. The guys are really awesome. And then the second part was now I'm really competing for a job. So it went more of, before I was kind of pushing myself to see how far I could take it almost, and if I could be the guy. And now it really is a competition. And that was the second part when I was competing was much more difficult. Because every single day you felt like you were under the microscope, and that a mistake that you make in a clearing drill or a shot you let in practice in the fall could be the difference between being named the starter or not. And it was really intense, and we didn't really know where we stood. Our coach took his time choosing which guy was going to be the starter. So for a long time, it was really tough, and seeking like kind of any information or validation wasn't really there. So I had to go pretty internal for that, and it definitely taught me about kind of keep my head down, working hard, trusting myself, believing myself, leaning on my teammates, my friends when I really needed it. And I think it's a really good metaphor for life, and if things aren't going your way career wise or in the workforce. And it's kind of just like playing in a game or just like playing in practice. You got to just trust yourself and keep working hard, stay at it, get the extra reps. And eventually it'll all work out if you give the time that it deserves.
I know how excited you were to get this season started. And then, due to Ivy League rules and then a little snowstorm, Princeton was actually the last team in Division I to make its 2024 debut. And then you played 3 games in 6 days. What have you learned, your whole team and you about the Princeton Tigers team in just the last couple of weeks?
Question. What have I learned? First thing is that we are going to grow a lot this year. Obviously, looking at our lineup, there are a lot of guys that didn't get a ton of minutes before we graduated our first line midfield. Some guys on defense. So some guys who haven't had a ton of minutes before are have to step up now. And that was always kind of a question mark the media put on us, but it's awesome to watch these guys like Quinn Kramer, for example. Got some minutes last year, midfielder for us, sophomore. Got some minutes for us last year, played pretty well. Eventually, his time got cut a little short, but he had two great goals against Manhattan when we really needed him, and he stepped up, and it was awesome to watch him like shoulder that role. John Dumphy worked his way up through injuries to be a first and second line midfielder last year. Had a huge goal for us against Penn State, and then he had a hat trick against Manhattan. He really stepped up. Obviously, our two freshmen, the big names, Nate Kibiri and Colin Burns. Nate Kibiri is leading our team right now. We play Maryland. I think we had 7 goals. 3 guys each had a goal, and Nate had 4. And it's like, all right, like we always wondered, can the fresh, like how much can you really put on the freshmen? Because they're awesome players and great guys. But like at the end of the day, they're still freshmen. So it's their first time really being a college game. And Nate proved that he can shoulder that burden. He was our leading scorer, which is really great. And while we lost on Saturday, or yeah, we lost on Saturday, and that was really difficult. I think we had a great response to that locker room at halftime after the game. We really took it as it's not, we lost, and that's terrible, and we hate losing, but it's really bad if we don't learn from it. And it's only one loss. Teams don't go undefeated. And we've had a great week of practice. We responded really well, brought the brains in the film session, and we're trying to get better from that.
Yeah, Terry Foy from Inside Lacrosse was at your game against Maryland, and his remarks were, it's two really good teams, but in different stages. Maryland is more experienced, older, playing great lacrosse right now. Princeton, lots of growth potential, but lots of youth and new faces taking on increased roles and responsibilities. So let's start on the defensive side, your buddies. Who are some of the leaders on the defense, some of those guys who have stepped up?
Leaders in the defense, first name, Pace Billings, senior captain, defenseman. His sophomore year, he was the second LSM and was all tournament team for the Final Four. I mean, he's a beast. He stepped up a ton, taking a much more of a vocal role. He sees the game really well, has a great feel for it. Colin Molshan is another defenseman that we really leaned on. He started almost every game since his freshman year. Brunswick kid is a junior now. He's like a steady, quiet guy, just very calm, does his job, and he's like someone we can lean on for just kind of like the it's gonna be all right moments when it kind of hits the fan. Senior midfielders, defensive midfielders, Paul Wellington, Marquez White, and Joe Youngerkis got a bunch of time the last year, and now those are kind of like our backbone of the rope line of the rope unit. So those guys are all like experienced guys who really stepped into a new leadership role, which is awesome to watch. And guys really look to them. And then our new faces, we have Michael Bath, who is a junior LSM who's played a bunch before, but now he's coming down on close defense. Same with Cooper Kistler, who played LSM, coming down on close defense. It's awesome to watch those guys who were really kind of your prototypical middle of the field defenseman, great with ground balls, great sticks, now working on close defensive roles, getting dodged by attackmen, different types of dodges. And they really stepped up, which is great. So I think we had some growing pains, not growing pains, but it took a little time to get used to guys in different positions. But now I think we're really settling in on defense.
On the offensive side, I think fans know that Colter McAsee is an All-American. He's a known quantity. You talked about Kibiri and Burns, but you also mentioned how you graduated your first midfield. Can you talk about some of the other guys who are stepping up into new roles and how they're coming along on the offensive side?
Yes. So Obviously, Colts are a guy. When the game's on the line with the ball in Colts, like he's the man. Cabin Burns are stepping up. They're freshmen, but they don't play like freshmen. Burnsy is very level-headed. He is an unlimited motor. And then Cab is just a super savvy player. He sees the game really, really well. And they're both playing like they've been in 40 games by now. From the midline, stepping up, we have Sean Cameron, who played a bunch last year and was like a staple second line guy and got first line minutes when injuries happened. He's playing really well. Tommy Barnes, another senior, stepping up. He's got great frame, understands the game really, really well. He's very savvy as well. Like I mentioned, Quinn Kramer and John Dunphy, tons of speed, great athletes coming out of the box. Those are guys that haven't gotten a ton of minutes before, but have stepped up. I mean, they had great falls, great winners, and it's fun like watching them put on all this hard work and then really having their time to shine. Lucas Stannett got into the lineup and attacked some games last year, sometimes midfield. He really moved around, kind of a Swiss Army knife, big 6'4" lefty. He's playing great. He's got a great shot. It's cool because that offensive unit looks at it almost as obviously there's not as much experience as we've had in the past, just with a bunch of seniors graduating. So they took it on as like a collective unit to build each other up, have honest conversations, and just try to be the best group possible, which we really appreciate in the DN because score a lot of goals for us, makes our job a little easier.
NIL, really a great resource for lacrosse players. I know we hear oftentimes football is the front page news and major dollars, but you've been able to secure an opportunity with Goalie Rat and with an NIL deal. What does that deal entail, and what opportunities and benefits does this situation offer student athletes such as yourself?
Yeah, so Lax Goalie Rat reached out and they want to do some NIL deal. Essentially, it's more of like a virtual coach. You make some videos with him, do some Q&As, record some drills you like, and then you can reach out, like goalies can reach out, which I was all about because when I was a little kid, I used to just consume college and pro goalie content. So being able to give back, I thought was pretty cool. And then just NIL in general, I mean, the way I look at it is, I mean, we're college lacrosse players. Like we're not Johnny Manziel, like no one, like we're not like Anthony Davis, you know. So our time and any ability to make an impact on the like lacrosse community and make money with it is super, super small. So take advantage of that while you have it. I mean, we are maybe like some of the best guys in college lacrosse are big fish and like really, really small ponds. So, you know, this is kind of like the only time where you can really give back, profit a little bit, have some fun with it, and you know, we're all college kids to try to make a little bit of money. So some guys are all for it. I don't really, some guys don't really love being super in the spotlight. They like their ideals to be a little quieter, promote some stuff here and there, which I can appreciate, be a little more internal. But just trying to capitalize on a pretty cool thing that we have now, for our little world of college girls.
This weekend, Princeton and Penn will head down to Tobacco Road to take on North Carolina and Duke on Friday night, and then you'll switch and you'll go to different schools and play them again on Sunday. What is your understanding about how this weekend came together?
Right. So our coaches always talk about trying to give us two paths to the NCAA tournament. So the first path is your RPI at large bid from playing a great out of conference schedule. Your second path in league, Ivy League play. So my sophomore year, we took the first path. We won some out of conference games and didn't even make the Ivy tournament. Then last year, we lost every out of conference game after our first two and won the Ivy. So I know Duke plays Penn every year pretty consistently. UNC obviously very close to them. Penn is close to us relatively. So they were just looking for another way that we can get in two great ACC out of conference RPI matchups essentially, to give us that other path into the NCAA tournament so that we can eventually hopefully make the dance and make some noise.
Mike, two big games for the Princeton Tigers this weekend and a pretty nice setup. Friday night in Chapel Hill against North Carolina, Sunday at Koskinen, Duke University. Not only are these two great opportunities to get quality wins, one potentially against the number one team currently in the country, but this could be great preparation for the Ivy League tournament later on in the season that I know you guys are gunning for and would like to secure a berth in. What's the mindset heading into this weekend, the approach in these two games for the Tigers?
Absolutely. So the experience we're all really excited about. We've never flown to a game when I've been here. So everyone's excited to, you know, we'll go through the airport. We're like little kids again. So that'll be fun. Obviously, UNC and Duke are big venues, historic venues. So being in that atmosphere against top 20 programs, playing on a field that you grew up watching on TV, is going to be really, really cool. Duke didn't play Princeton when I was growing up watching on TV, but I watched a ton of Duke games, and I always, you know, wanted to be on a college lacrosse team playing there. So, that'll be a lot of fun, and we're really excited about that. Just being, you know, we want to be big-time lacrosse players, so playing in big-time games is what it's all about. For our turnaround in terms of Ivy League tournament, which is great, our shortest turnaround we had last year was we played a Saturday and a Tuesday. So now we're Friday, Sunday, which is the same as the Ivy tournament was last year. Playing lacrosse games, college lacrosse games, really takes a toll on everyone's body. And our Saturday-Tuesday game last year, the starters didn't play the whole game on Saturday, and they didn't play the whole game on Tuesday. So you never really had that whole, you know, everyone in for each game. In the Ivy tournament, we had that. So that was kind of our first time having to manage your player load on those days off. And now we have experience to do the same thing again. So I know that, like, our trainers, our nutritionists are bringing a ton of food for us. Our strength coach, very involved. We have a ton of different equipment that we can recover in between games. That's going to be the biggest thing. Luckily, it's not going to be like the Ivy tournament where it's going to be May and 75 degrees. It'll be a little cooler, so we won't sweat as much. But yeah, it'll be good to do quick game prep on Sunday or Saturday, and also like give ourselves a chance to recover, because that's going to be, hopefully, we're going to do that again in the Ivy tournament and again in the NCAA tournament Final Four weekend.
So you are a senior captain at Princeton, and you've been a captain at Culver, and I think you were a captain at Tower Hill too. So every team you've ever played on, you've been a leader on. I don't know if you know this, but a current Culver dad recently reached out to me unsolicited, very generous of this guy to do this, and told me that he was super complimentary of you, and you've left a legacy at Culver. They do senior videos, and you can talk about a former Culver student who left an impression on you. And a lot of kids did that. In fact, about half the kids who did weren't even lacrosse players. How did your Culver experience help shape your work ethic, your leadership skills, and make you the leader that you are?
Culver, obviously, the military school. So they asked a lot of the kids outside of lacrosse. And then Coach Posner, you might as well have run a military lacrosse team, because he asked a lot of you on the field. And it just demanded a lot of a person going there. And so when you get to college, you have way more free time. You know, for a lot of kids, it's their first time being away from home. Boarding school kids, it's not. So it was kind of like it gave you the freedom of being away from your parents at Culver, but they put a ton on you and demanded a lot from you. So then when you got to college, you could keep doing the same thing every day. Like, for a while, our homework time from 8 to 10 in high school, I kept the same homework time 8 to 10 in college, because that's just what I knew. So, you know, just your day-to-day life, you could handle a lot of things and have great time management skills because of Culver. And then the military aspect, athlete or not, they put you in leadership roles within the school. So every kid learns how to be a follower first, which is very, very important. And then they learn how to be a leader when they get a little older. And that's instrumental, because it teaches you how to balance people that aren't as like-minded with each other or as similar. So on the lacrosse field, like, a lot of kids that went to Colvin play lacrosse are going to be pretty similar. They all grew up kind of the same. They all love lacrosse, whatever. But when you go into, like, your unit, is what it's called, it's basically a floor. The kids come from all over the world, and you have to learn how to manage people that want to do the military, don't want to do the military. Some kids are 14 years old and they're missing their parents for the first time, and I'm 18 and I have to, handle this. So it teaches you how to compartmentalize and be a good leader off the field. And then those same skills translate on the field really well. Coach Posner, he, like I mentioned before, asked a lot of his players, and he really taught you what the right thing to do was. And if you were not doing the right thing, he let you know right away. He was honest and honest feedback, instant feedback, which was great. So it kind of ironed out a lot of the kinks in some kids and some players, myself included. So when you get to college, you know what's expected of you. And you see a ton of Culver kids play their freshman year, sophomore year in college, even when they're young. And I think it's just a testament to Coach P, Coach Meijer, and I don't know what they force their players to become.
All right, your family has been super supportive of you, especially parents, your siblings. What's that support mean to you?
It means everything. It's great. My parents come to every game, whether I was playing or not. They were always there. My sister Katie is super, super involved. My brother George, the same thing. Before every game, I like looking up in the stands to try to find my parents or any family members at the game just to see where they're sitting. So, there's some hard times in the game. You look up, you see your mom, you're like, all right, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. So it means a lot. Getting off the bus, being able to see them. They love to, whenever we're on away games, they come the night before the game to the hotel and sit and talk to me for like 30 minutes in the lobby. Talk about the scout, talk about what the game is going to be like. My dad loves to ask what the refs thought after the game, which is really fun. And it after bad games, like after bad games or great wins, it's awesome to go see my parents and celebrate with them or have them make me feel better. So, like my sister texts me every day that we have a game, like it's a national holiday, which is awesome because everyone loves it. Everyone loves the Tigers.
All right, last question for you. Princeton's one of the schools that doesn't allow for fifth years for grad students. Kind of famously, last year, 15 guys went into the portal on the same day, and now you're playing against some of those guys, right? They're all over the country, and making a difference in even Sam English last night with 3 goals in a game against Army. I know you want to play another year of college lacrosse, and you want to go to grad school. I'm not going to ask you where you're going. That's not going to happen. I was asked to make you announce that, but I don't even think you know. But what are the kind of things that you've been thinking about, you and your teammates, as you kind of make those decisions? Like, what are those things that are important about being recruited all over again, kind of?
Well, the first thing is that it's a really tough decision and it stinks. I would love to be able to go 4 years of undergrad and then do my fifth year at the same school, the same coaches, same team that a lot of other guys at non-Ivy schools have the privilege of being able to do. And unfortunately, it's not the case for us. And our freshman year, when it got canceled, we had the choice to take a gap year, take time off, which some guys did, and we didn't do that. And so now for 4 years, we knew this was going to happen and it's happening. So we made our bed, and now we have to sleep in it, basically. So the process, we like last year, we all wanted to go in on the same day and we wanted to get over with as quick as possible because we didn't want to be fielding phone calls from other coaches or have any other outside distractions during the season. Certainly not worrying about if you play well enough, if someone's going to want you the next year. So our conversations with each other have basically been, where can we go to have a great experience? Princeton's a really unique experience with being a smaller school, being kind of a small town, but still having pretty great sports. So some guys are just looking to maybe have the same experience, maybe a different experience. Just somewhere where we can go and the guys can go and have a good time and, enjoy grad school and set yourself up for the real world. Some guys are not interested in doing that. They've had their time. They want to end here, which a lot of people respect and appreciate. So, the process is kind of crappy. It feels like for it just it feels kind of sleazy talking to other coaches before the season starts. So, we don't really love it. We're really, really, we wish that we would be able to take another year at Princeton or take semesters off, like Some guys are able to do other schools, but that's not the case. So, and we know that. So we're just, it really emphasizes the time that we have together that while some guys do have another year playing lacrosse, and it's not going to be the same as being here and certainly not with each other. And while, I wish that I could do another year at Princeton, I also do appreciate the finality of all of it, and that after the season, yeah, I might have another year of lacrosse, but it won't be the same, and it won't be Princeton lacrosse, and to be able to soak that in now and really have the perspective, I think a lot of guys really appreciate.
That's a very mature answer, and I appreciate it. I wasn't sure I was going to include either of those last two questions in this interview, but I put you on the spot and you answered them really well. All right, a couple of quick hitters. Ready? Like literally things pop, first answer that pops into your head. Don't think too much about these. All right. First quick hitter. Where is your go-to campus food spot in Princeton?
In the morning or afternoon, probably Olives, Grape Deli, Mediterranean spot, and then at night after practice, Taqueria, which is kind of like Chipotle, a little smaller, and it stays open late so the guys can get that after practice.
Great. Favorite road venue to play in?
Maryland was very, very cool to play in. Penn Stadium was great. Columbia hosted a great Ivy League tournament, great locker rooms. So I'd probably say, and I'll let you know how UNC and Duke goes.
Best food or dish that your mom makes?
Chicken parm, homemade gravy.
Favorite Princeton team to go watch and support?
We love the basketball team. They're great guys and they're having an unbelievable season.
Favorite Taylor Swift song?
Karma.
Funniest guy on the team?
Air locks at my roommate.
Favorite uncle?
Uncle Dan, D fly.
I'll edit that out, maybe. Who knows? Best shooter that you've ever faced?
Even though he's on my team, Colton Magazine. 100%.
I know you work out with a lot of Princeton alumni who are pro players.
Michael said I was pretty good, but no one shoots a ball like Colt.
TikTok or Instagram?
Instagram.
Best road meal or team dinner spot when you guys are traveling?
Maggiano's. We're going there on Saturday night.
We need to get Maggiano's as a sponsor on this podcast because every coach takes their team there. We talk about it all the time. All right, last question. Who's a better cook? Grandma G or Mama G?
Oh, you're getting me in trouble with this answer. Mama G will understand. Grandma G makes good meatballs.
They're both amazing. All right, Mike, thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you and your Princeton Tiger teammates, not only this weekend, but throughout the rest of the season. And thanks for coming on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me. Go Tigers.
We're back with the D-Fly and Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Dixie, I've kind of been waiting for 4 years to have that interview. It was
Yeah,
great.
you
I,
have.
that kid's the best. He's the best, and he's had a great lacrosse career so far, and his future is bright on and off the field. And the kid's the man.
I think about I compare you to Vince Vaughn in the movie Swingers, the at the end of the movie where he all grows up a little bit. I can't remember the terminology that he uses for Jon Favreau's
He's
character,
like
but like
Mikey. He's like the Mikey.
he all
He's all
grows up
grown.
and now he's all grows up.
Yeah, that's great. Hey, Dixie, before we get to the game previews, there's no better way to experience college lacrosse than you do. You're a game official, you're down on the field. But if you want to experience it like that, you gotta get your tickets for the College Lacrosse Live Series. It's the best way to experience college lacrosse up close and personal and be part of the action. For the Delaware Syracuse game on March 16th at Paul VI High School in Chantilly, Virginia. The Blue Hens and Orange face off at 2 p.m. in the first event of the College Lacrosse Live Series this season. Tickets are available for adults at $25 and for youth fans ages 12 and under for $12, only $12. Fans can also purchase tickets for a VIP hospitality experience that includes sideline access, food, and beverage. There's nothing better than like sitting right at the side of the field and having a food and drink available to you. I mean, it's It's really the only way to do it. It's really the only way to do it. To learn more about the series and purchase tickets, visit collegelacrosselive.com to get your tickets today. That's collegelacrosselive.com. Get your tickets today. Delaware versus Syracuse, March 16th, where lacrosse is up close and personal. All right, Dixie, eight games on tap this weekend featuring two top 20 teams. I don't know if we've ever had this many games like this. And it starts on Friday night. Number 17, Penn, they're 2-1. They'll take on the top ranked Duke Blue Devils at 6 p.m. And you can catch that on the ACC network.
Penn scored a big win over Delaware, a really good Blue Hen team over the weekend, going in to play number one Duke. Brendan O'Neill leading the way. Jake Naso, face-off dot, doing a great job. It'll be a terrific game, and I think this is going to go a long way, especially if Penn can beat Duke, pull off, the upset. So it'll be. I was just down at Koskinen last weekend. I did the Duke Clemson women's game for the ACC network. Wow, Clemson for a second year program. They are good, but Koskinen's beautiful. First time I've been there since they renovated the place. So that should be hopping on Friday night.
Also on Friday night, Princeton, number 15, they're 2-1, will take on number 18, North Carolina. That game's at 8, and it's on the ACC network as well.
Yeah, and heading down to Chapel Hill this Friday. We'll be down there for both the games this weekend for the Tar Heels. This is a you want to talk about a place that'll be hopping. What a beautiful facility, Durance Field. And this will be interesting because I think we saw the youth of Princeton against Maryland, especially on the offensive end. And you've got youth for Carolina on an offensive end as well. So it'll be a good matchup between two, veteran goaltenders, Colin Krieg for Carolina, Michael Giafancaro for Princeton. Face-offs, Brady Wambach is doing an exceptional job for North Carolina. And so much to the fact that they're putting Andrew Tyrer on wings now, which a lot of people are questioning, but I think that's really smart because Tyrer had, what, 12, 14 goals last year? So if that guy can pick a ball up off the wing, he's a really good lacrosse player. He can make something happen. Princeton struggled mightily against Maryland at the faceoff dots. That's another area to keep an eye on.
Moving on to Saturday, March 2nd, starts with number 22, Ohio State, taking on number 9, Cornell. That game's at noon.
I tell you, we didn't talk much about the Ohio State Virginia game. I was really impressed with Caleb Fioch, Big Tasty. Very familiar with him. Played club with my son Owen for the Crabs in Baltimore. I thought he was really, really good against Virginia. And Ohio State just never went away in that game. Virginia is my number one team right now in my vote for the Inside Lacrosse Media poll. And they're taking on a Cornell team that's tough one goal loss to Denver on the road. They'll be looking to get back on track. But I think Ohio State probably gained a lot of confidence, even though they lost that game against Virginia. I think that they are starting to realize they can, compete with the big boys, and Cornell certainly in that category.
In a battle of the winged helmets, number 13, Michigan travel to Newark to take on number 19, Delaware at noon.
It'll be a great game. Michigan coming off a midweek win, went down to Jacksonville and beat the Dolphins. And then, as we mentioned, Delaware that lost to Penn. It's a Delaware team that has been to the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. Ben DeLuca has built a real rough, tough group in Newark, and defending Big Ten champions against the defending CAA champions should be a good one.
It keeps going. Number 10, Yale, they're undefeated, will take on number 12, Penn State in State College. This game is also at noon.
Penn State seems to be back on track after the upset loss to Colgate in week one. They just only allowed 3 goals to Navy over the weekend, 13-3 victory. And Yale, Matt Brandau, 13 points in his last outing. I mean, that guy's a machine. And they're doing a nice job. They lost Leo Johnson, their quarterback of the offense, is out for the season. So they've been able to mitigate his absence with some other scorers stepping up. And this is always a. Remember, we did this game right before the season shut down back in 2020. Yale came into to Panzer and limited Grant Amant and the Nittany Lions. So this is always a good game.
And even despite those three amazing games, the game of the day on Saturday is going to be number 8, Johns Hopkins going down to Charlottesville to take on the undefeated Virginia Cavaliers at 1 o'clock. I heard Terry Foy talk about how the inside lacrosse crew is rolling up there in full force to have you covered for the post-game analysis. But what's your pre-game analysis?
I think this is a real measuring stick for Johns Hopkins going into Kloeckner, taking on a Virginia team. It just has so many offensive weapons. Hopefully, I don't know what the weather is supposed to be like in Charlottesville on Saturday, but if it's a, I mean, that crowd over the weekend for the Ohio State game was awesome. The grassy knoll was, speaking of Dallas, famous grassy knolls. The grassy knoll at Kloeckner was packed, and it was great. This always for the Doyle Smith Cup, the longtime SID at University of Virginia, Johns Hopkins undergrad, credited with a lot of the current statistics that we keep, the categories that we keep in the sport of lacrosse. But Hopkins right now 4-1. They've rebounded nicely after that opening season loss, the late collapse against Denver. They're playing at a high level, so this will be a fun game for Virginia and Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, it'll be a great one. It really will be. Three games on Sunday. So there's a, you know, the Princeton and Penn are down there. They're going to flip-flop. And this time Princeton will play at Duke at noon. This game will be on the ACC and Extra at noon. And then we have Penn playing North Carolina at noon as well.
Yeah, I think we'll be able to maybe handicap these games a little bit better after the Friday night action. We'll see, who comes out healthier and looking better. But what a great opportunity for all four of these teams to play two games in the span of 3 days against really quality opponents. So I'm looking forward. Like I said, I'll be at the Carolina games, respectively, Princeton and Penn. Really looking forward to that. So there you have it.
And then to round out the weekend, probably the biggest game of the entire weekend, number 3, Maryland. So they're undefeated at 4-0. We'll travel out to South Bend, take on Notre Dame, who are looking to bounce back after a loss to Georgetown. That game's at noon, and fans can catch it on ESPNU.
Just a rivalry that continues to be compelling, competitive, entertaining. Notre Dame winning in overtime last year in College Park with Pat Cavanaugh scoring the game-winning goal. Notre Dame coming off of the loss. Maryland comes in rolling heavy, really. I mean, playing really, really good ball. Always an entertaining game. Should get a lot of eyeballs being on Sunday on ESPNU. And Maryland's defense. I mean, how many times? I mean, Maryland's had some really, really good defenses over the years, but how many times are you come into South Bend and you say you probably have the better defense? Maryland, I think, does right now collectively as a unit a better defense. Liam Enteman wasn't on his game, didn't play his typical first team All-American kind of ball game against Georgetown. Look for him to rebound, but the other first team All-American, the 2022 first team All-American, Logan McNaney at the other end. So this one is really shaping up to be a classic. And I guess you don't say it as much as you used to. Do you think this one will be low scoring? I mean, both teams feature some really, I think Notre Dame's offense is better than Maryland's, but the Terps can still put the ball in the cage. Eric Spanos had a great game against Princeton. I don't know. I think I might go with a little bit more low scoring, especially if Maryland can do what Georgetown did and control the tempo, control possessions.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have said if you asked me, like low double digits, like 12 11, 11 10, something like that, 10, 10 9. But this will be an epic game. And again, fantastic weekend. Yeah, I'm going to also down to Tobacco Road, see Princeton play and go to Duke. I can't wait. Find your game. I hope everyone has their plans already lined up. I hope you might be listening to this on your way to those games. Enjoy this weekend because it's a really special one. Really special one before teams start getting into conference play. All right, Dixie, it's time for our give and go. I know you've been on the road for like a week. You've been at a work function conference, and this is an important topic. I know people talk about how to attack a zone defense or how to attack a 10-man ride. But what people don't understand is how to attack a buffet. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're veterans. We've been seen a million of these things at different times, different places, different hours of the day, different meals. And let's walk listeners through the proper way to execute a perfect buffet meal. All right. So I have a couple of rules just for starters. Right. And it doesn't matter whether you're at a breakfast buffet or it's lunch or whatever. First of all, no drinks. If you have a drink in your hand, you find your seat where you're going to sit, mark it, put your drink down. You need both hands when you go through the buffet. Right. Second, don't be bashful. You only got to be casual about it. You don't want to be that rude person who's like waiting in line or like even pushy. But when they say, okay, buffet is open, don't be afraid to be that first guy to go up there. Casually, you don't run, but you stroll up there and you start at the side where the plates are. Don't be the guy who just walks up and like takes something out of the middle of the buffet. There is an order, can't be chaos. Get in line and slowly work your way through it. But the key is work your way through it. You don't stop. You have to keep moving. There's nothing worse than the person who is holding up the whole line. Another rule. If there's two sides to the buffet, use them, right? There's two obvious two sides. Use them. Don't hold up the line, just stick on one side. Other thing, silverware. I like a proper buffet. You put the silverware either on the tables or at the end of the buffet line so you don't have to carry that. Throw that in your pocket. If it's by the plates, throw the little rolled up silverware, your fork in there. And then because you're going early, I'm planning a second trip. That's why you go early. You don't want to be late and then you get stuck in the speakers going or you don't have time because everyone else is eating and it's clearing out. So that's why you hit the buffet early and you get the variety, a little bit of everything. So if it's a breakfast, I'm going to get the eggs. I'm going to get a little bit of fresh fruit. Going to get some meat, maybe some potatoes, but no bread. Bread's for losers. That's a JV move. Don't get bread, don't get pastries. Don't do that. That's your second trip. After you've had something to eat, you can go back to stand in the line, whether it's or and same with the omelet line or the waffle line. Get a little bit of sustenance in yourself. Make sure you've had a little bit, and then you can go work the room. Do you have any strategies, particular strategies you go for?
I don't really have strategies, but I have more etiquette. So I'm at a meeting that has upwards of 800 people. And this hotel has done a fantastic job all week of feeding us and also really good buffet setup. It's a line. And typically when we get out of a session, it's lunch and the food's already out. They're ready to go. Breakfast is, I typically grab a workout and then go eat breakfast. Why are you snickering? What's the matter with you?
Just a little humble brag right there. You had to
Hey,
throw in there. You got to get that workout in.
I've lost a few LBs. I want to keep it up, even though I'm on the road.
Yeah, look good.
So there's a couple things. One, because we're coming out of session, especially for lunch, people have their computer bags or backpacks or purses or whatever. Beware of your surroundings. Be aware of the people that are behind you. Because when people back up or swing around to look at something or say something, they're going to hit into the person behind them.
It's the same way like boarding an airplane. Like, come on, have some self-awareness of what you're doing when you
Yeah.
turn around.
Yeah. Be aware. And then when you're going through, so like at lunch, we typically have, and the silverware is at the top of the next to the plate. So you grab your plate, grab your silverware, typically salad. Then some kind of vegetables, and then you get into, rice, potatoes, whatever starch. And then you have the main deals, and it's typically chicken, fish, and beef. Just scoop that out. Just scoop it out, whatever you want. Don't sit there and, sticking your nose over looking at it. Sebastian Maniscalco does a great bit on Subway. And he's, like when the person goes into the Subway and they're like pressing their face up against the glass or like peering over, trying to determine what they, what toppings they want. As he says, run it through the garden. Run it through the garden.
Totally
Just,
agree.
don't gawk at it, right? Because if you don't get it right the first time, just it's free. Just put the plate
So
to have
true.
it taken away and then go back and get something else.
Yes, it's
Also,
not your last meal ever, you know? And again, this is why you go early, is so that if you get something that you didn't love, or you say, man, that was really good. Now I've tried 10 things or 5 things. I'm going to go back and get this and that for a little bit more. Totally agree.
yeah. And when you do scoop out whatever you're getting, so let's say there's like a vegetable medley, don't be just scooping out the broccoli or the cauliflower or
You can't
anything.
pick. It's like the guy who gets like the trail mix, my kids, and they take out all the M&Ms. You're like, no, it's meant to be enjoyed, all of it together, the different flavors. You're not allowed to pick. Can't pick.
And just if just take the scoop. And then if all you want is broccoli, just eat the broccoli out. That's
Yes.
it. Don't hold people up.
Yes.
Just don't hold people, because the people that behave the way that we're talking about, like it's an assembly line. Like people are hungry. People could, people do meet, lunch meetings. Like it this week, different working groups, different business units are having lunch meetings. People have to get to that meeting and they have a finite amount of time to eat. Other people just want to maybe grab something to eat and then go to their room and chill out for a few minutes, get away from the crowd. The people that behave like that, the gap gets the 10-yard gap, as they're farting around with picking, sticking their nose in a dish or smelling something or picking food out. And those are rookie mistakes. Like those are just
JV.
absolute rookie mistakes. Totally agree. Before, so if you go, and then after you have your plate of food, find your spot, put your bag down in the chair you're sitting. Typically, you find, folks that are in on your team and things of that nature. Then you go get your drinks. If you want soup, they've had soup here all week. Go get your soup, but you cannot have a drink in one hand or a bowl of soup in one hand and the plate in the other and be fully functional. You can't. You
No.
gotta.
And the,
You gotta have your hands free to do what you need to do.
yeah, and the people who do that are so JV. Like they, and that's what takes them so long. They're like, well, I got to put my drink down to scoop up whatever I want that I've just smelled and looked at. And then they got to pick their drink up, move to the next station to use. No, you're so accurate. A couple of,
And being in line is not a time to socialize. That's when you get to your table. That's when you socialize. And I'll tell you something else that burned my eggs. A colleague of mine. Yesterday, I was in line and the line was fairly long, but it moves, if you do things correctly, it moves pretty fast. This person comes up to me and says, "Oh, Mark, I'm sorry. Can I just grab a piece of chicken?" Because they didn't want to wait in line. They're like, "Can I just grab a piece of chicken real quick?" I mean, I can't say no, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, here's the world and it revolves around you.
Yeah, so true. And then don't be that guy that piles the food on top.
No,
Like,
that is a bad
no.
look. Bad
Again,
look.
they'll come back and put more out. You can get in the line again. When the line dies down, that's when you're ready to make your second trip to the buffet. And then I have another a small tip that I'll. If it's a backyard barbecue, summertime, I always, again, I'm not a two plate guy. You can't have two plates of food that you're carrying around. That's overdoing it and selfish. And again, you can go back, but I double like the paper plates, always stack them. Never just take the single paper plate. I always double stack them to give you that extra stability.
Extra heft.
The extra heft, even when you have the good ones, you gotta double up the paper plates. So that's how you handle a buffet. I feel like that's a good place to stop, Dixie. I hope you all have learned something because we're pros. We are pros when it comes to a good buffet. I'd like to thank our guest, Mike John Ficarro, best of luck to you and your Princeton teammates this week and throughout the regular season. A reminder that the DFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. We'll be here all season. If you like what you heard, do us a favor. Please like us on your favorite podcast app, Spotify, iTunes, whatever it is, and leave a review. Tell a friend. Share this with your lacrosse buddies, your family, your friends. It's free. Just subscribe. You don't have to listen every week. Just subscribe, though. Help us out. We always love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening. And as always, enjoy the games.